Northwest, the legend of Bigfoot dates back hundreds of years.
This is Strange Harbor. Ghosts, UFOs, aliens, Sasquatch, all things strange.
He became the first cabinet-level politician from a G8 country to publicly state that there is extraterrestrial life present on Earth.
Strange Harbor, online at strangeharbor.net.
They say everything that we know, everything that we are, everything that we have comes from the people living on Nibiru.
Strange Harbor, be strange.
Stories of UFO sightings and alien abductions date back centuries. My next guest says the rumors are true. He was abducted by aliens 45 years ago.
The abduction phenomenon is clandestine. The way the secrecy prevails is that first and foremost, the abductees are not allowed to remember what happened to them. So when they do remember, it's not a full memory. It's in bits and pieces of memory.
I did a polygraph, a voice stress test. There was eyewitnesses to this account.
Strange Harbor, ghosts, UFOs, aliens, Sasquatch, all things strange.
Don't miss a single episode because strange things are going to happen.
This is Strange Harbor.
And another exciting episode of Strange Harbor, where we talk about the weird. We talk about ghosts, UFOs, near-death experience, Sasquatch, conspiracy theories, and so much more. I am Johnny Manson, and she is MUFON investigator Cherie DeSeuss.
Keeping it real with UFOs.
And our guest today is an author who's written approximately 27 books on aliens, UFOs, extraterrestrials, ghosts, Sasquatch, and more, Preston Dennett.
Preston is part of MUFON, and he is an amazing writer, and I'm very excited to have you on board. Your list of books and written material is just amazing. And your thoughts about UFOs, I just can't wait to start talking to you.
Hey, thanks so much for having me on. Yeah,
he hung up. So where should we start? What do you want to talk about, Mr. Dennett?
I love it all. UFOs are really kind of something that's intrigued me for a very long time. Ever since I found out they were real.
Have you seen UFOs?
I have, yeah. Well, not until I started looking for them.
Right.
I was skeptical. I mean, I did not believe in this stuff at all. Nothing paranormal. I was a materialist, I guess you would say.
Yeah.
1986, everything changed for me.
How did it change? What happened?
Oh, I got dragged into the Twilight Zone. Seriously. I heard this report on the news, November 1986. There was a sighting over Alaska. It's now a very well-known sighting. Captain Tenju Taroshi and his crew were flying a Japanese commercial airliner.
Captain Tenju Taroshi was an ex-fighter pilot with over 10,000 hours of flight experience.
The crew of JAL 1628 believe they've spotted a strange object over Alaska, four times bigger than an aircraft carrier.
They can have 12,000 people on an aircraft carrier, and figure there's four of them.
As the object hovers ever closer, the crew is forced to deal with increasing turbulence.
Upon moving in front of their plane at seemingly impossible speed, the UFO exhibited a reverse thrust to match the speed of the plane. When it slowed down, it began to glow immensely. At this point, the radio goes dead. Captain Taroshi stated that the glow was dazzlingly bright and that it made his face feel warm. Of the UFO's movement, he said, the thing was flying as if there was no such thing as gravity. It sped up, then stopped, then flew at our speed in our direction, so that to us, it appeared to be standing still. The next instant, it changed course.
Literally has to scare the crap out of the pilot. He's thinking that if this aircraft is following him and that he makes a big circle, that this guy will go on his way and it won't bother him anymore.
And even through a 360-degree turn in an attempt to shake the craft.
But seconds later, the mysterious craft is back.
The thing followed him all the way around the turn.
JAL 1628.
Primary target behind you in trail. Can you see it?
Air traffic controller has no way to identify the strange craft in his airspace. He contacts an approaching airline to help him investigate.
He couldn't report seeing the object that Tarocci was seeing.
The crew at JAL 1628 report that they, too, can no longer see the object. John Callahan immediately interviews the JAL crew. All three crew members provide similar reports of what they saw. That report appears to be backed up by radar data from the Elmendorf U.S. Air Force Base. They confirm that a very large craft was spotted that night near JAL 1628. But a group of UFO skeptics later issues a press release claiming the crew saw Jupiter and Mars. Another theory suggests that the strange lights were reflections of moonlight in clouds filled with turbulent ice crystals. However, all weather data for that evening indicates a clear sky with good visibility.
Since it was rare that an experienced crew, an air traffic control, and the FAA all confirmed the existence of an unidentified flying object, Captain Tarocci was grounded for speaking with the press and given a desk job for a few years.
But it captured my interest. So I remembered my brother had said he'd seen a UFO, and I just flat out didn't believe him. And now I was starting to wonder. And stupid me. Yeah, I made the mistake of asking him about it. And he's like, yeah, I saw one. I chased it in my car. It was metallic. You know, it had little lights on it, a dome. I'm like, you're kidding, Mark. I mean, what are you talking about? He's like, no, for real. If you don't believe me, ask Greg and Phil, his friends. They were with me. I'm like, okay. I knew them. They were his friends, so I called him up. And they confirmed his stories, told the same details. And I found out that my sister-in-law had had sightings, a couple of friends, one involving missing time. I brought it up at work, another big mistake. People I'd worked with for years were telling me these amazing encounters.
Wow.
And another involving missing time. Or gray ETs.
Wow.
Like, holy cow, this is bad news. I mean, I could not believe it. I was scandalized.
Wow.
I was pretty upset for a year.
What did you think when you came to that conclusion? I mean,
initially I was horrified, honestly. Yeah. I'm like, okay, it's pretty clear UFOs are real. You know, I bought all the books I could. I subscribed to every magazine. I bought all the back issues of the MUFON Journal. I was obsessed. I went to conventions. I'm listening to radio shows. I'm going to MUFON meetings. I'm doing everything I can to figure this out. It was a long journey to accepting this, that it was really happening. I wasn't too happy about it, no, because people were being apparently kidnapped against their will. Did not look like a good thing. I was pretty upset about the government's handling of this. I came into this field really naive with no real idea that there was a cover-up, which is now demonstrable. I mean, we know that there has been and is a cover-up. It's not speculation.
Well, not only a cover-up, but do you believe that they may be complicit in allowing these things to happen?
Yes. Reading the whole Blue Book story, Project Blue Book, was pretty upsetting to find out that here's, you know, our tax dollars at work, and what are they doing? Their efforts are going towards making witnesses feel like idiots, disproving valid cases and focusing their attention on ones with prosaic explanation. It's still upsetting to this day. That's kind of why I just can't let this go. I think anyone who's researched UFOs gets trapped into it a little bit, and it's a hard thing to get out of or just to ignore.
Well,
it pulls
just,
you in.
Yeah, it changes you, doesn't it?
For sure. Yeah, I mean, ultimately I'm happy about it because now I know. Yeah, it's definitely a real head-scratcher in the beginning, to say the least. It flipped my world upside down. I had to readjust my entire worldview.
What have you concluded after writing all these books, going to all the conventions, you know, looking at all the MUFON material that's out there internationally? What have you concluded about aliens?
Well, you know, I have flip-flopped a little bit on how I feel, you know, about this phenomena. Initially, I was pretty upset and horrified at abductions. It's clear to me people are being taken on board, fairly large numbers, and I say that because early into my research, I heard a quote from J. Allen Hynek, who, as you know, the father of Project Blue Book and really ufology itself. He said, according to, I think it's William Steinman, 1 in 40 people have had an onboard UFO encounter. I thought, no, no way. I know 40 people, and that's what sort of prompted me to ask everyone I knew. And by this point, I had all the books I could find on this phenomena. I started looking at, you know, the research of other investigators, and I ended up writing an article for the MUFON Journal called 1 in 40, which basically said that, yeah, abductions are an epidemic. About a year later, the Roper poll came out. They had done a huge survey asking various questions to determine if people showed the markers of being a UFO contactee, an abductee, and they found 1 in 50. I remember Walt Andrus, the editor of the MUFON Journal, wrote me back saying, you know, that was a good call, kind of predicted that. I'm like, wow, yeah, So that was one big conclusion I think that people should know, is this is fairly widespread, millions of people. I think we've got a pretty good handle on the alien agenda, because when people are taken on board, the experience does follow a pretty, you know, general pattern, right? To a certain extent, we can predict what a person is going to say in terms of what happens to them and what the UFOs look like and what the entities look like.
Are you in the same mindset that there are multiple aliens out there from different races?
Yeah, for sure. I have to tell you, my own research, it's mostly some variation of the grays, at least 50%. And I'm not sure all the grays are like the same species as we would think of it either. Some are really short and emotionless and robotic.
And some are tall.
Yeah, and do display emotion. We have praying mantis type, of course, human-looking. There's a significant category that's just sort of a catch-all. Strange humanoids, I call it.
Then there's what, the reptilians?
Yeah. I don't get a whole lot of those. Definitely that's a category. We know when someone's taken on board, you know, they're going to probably describe a rounded room with indirect lighting, you know, perhaps being physically examined. These are certain things we see pretty often. But in terms of, like, the ET agenda, yeah, it's clear they're very interested in us physically. One of my first cases was one of these hybrid baby cases, you know, half ET, half human, which was, just, I know how that sounds to skeptics. And I just cringe when I have to try and tell them about this. Cause, like, alien babies, are you kidding me?
Right.
Usually when I hear about that, it's that the aliens have taken the baby and bring up the baby, but allow the parents to see it from time to time.
Yeah, that was one of my first cases, involved people being, you know, given a baby presentation, I guess is the term that's sometimes used, where they're taken on board a craft, presumably, and shown these babies, which are sometimes human, but usually not.
They look like they're a hybrid, right?
Right.
They don't pass for human, or if they do, it's just something about them that looks odd, or they do odd things.
Yeah, they appear to be half gray, half human.
Well, you know, they've been playing with our DNA, some say, for a long time. Do you prescribe to that notion?
Yeah, I do, actually.
Okay.
I definitely do. I think there's enough evidence, not only in current accounts, but some very interesting sort of historical accounts.
You know, I'm the Sasquatch guy, right? So I've heard reports, and have you heard reports, of Sasquatch either entering or exiting a UFO? Do you ever get anything like that?
I do.
Wow.
Yeah, I was pretty upset on my first case.
Really?
You know, I kind of started to have to look into various paranormal stuff, because it was clearly connected. I started to realize that a lot of people who were having extensive UFO experiences had a near-death experience, or had experiences with ghosts, or precognition, or out-of-body experiences. So I'm like, okay, something's going on here, and then Bigfoot comes in. I'm like, oh, great. I know this is going to be a can of worms, and sure enough, it was. I had to research Bigfoot, and found out pretty quickly that there's mountains of evidence stretching back, you know, 100 years at least. So it was clear from almost immediately to me that Bigfoot was real. And I got this case from a guy up in Canyon Country who said he'd seen a UFO land in his backyard, and the very next day he had a Bigfoot encounter, same exact spot. Felt like it was reading his mind. His dogs were all upset, and I had telepathy with it. So I found out that's a thing, which I didn't know about. That was the first kind of UFO Bigfoot case. Following that, he had a huge poltergeist breakout in his house. So I'm like, oh, God, you know, what is going on here? Most Bigfoot cases, in my experience, do not involve UFOs, and most UFO cases do not involve Bigfoot, 99.9%. But there's a handful of cases, you know, a good amount. Gosh, I'm going to say it's got to be at least 100, where they intersect exactly, perfectly.
Wow. That's
interesting. Like, okay. I mean, here's the case. I was writing a book, UFOs Over Colorado, and there was a guy who had a ranch in Colorado and was having trouble with cattle mutilations and Bigfoot and UFOs and just the whole deal, and finally comes upon this landed UFO near his home, and it was a saucer, and there was human-looking ETs there. Kind of took him a little bit to orient himself. He thought, you know, are these government people? What's going on? but he's like, sees this craft, like, oh my God, and these very sort of pale-skinned, mostly human-looking figures, and they were ordering this Bigfoot around. So it was like a pet. So I'm like, oh, yeah, that's kind of what I thought. I'm like, all right.
Well, you've just opened up a whole barrel of worms. I mean, you're mixing paranormal with UFOs and Sasquatch. I would love to know how you found out-of-body experiences, perhaps dreams, you know, all of that connected somehow to UFOs?
Yeah.
Seeing ghosts?
That definitely is. It's very strange. In my own personal case, I began investigating UFOs in 1986. You know, started having a few sightings. I mean, I was going out in the fields looking for them, and the whole deal, I was connecting with contactees. I wanted my own experience, and I did have them. And I started having out-of-body experiences as well, which was, I thought, okay, just a coincidence, and I didn't really make much of it until I started talking to other contactees, you know, experiencers, and a good portion of them would describe out-of-body experiences. And you know, I'm surveying the literature, trying to figure out what's this weird connection here. And one case always comes to mind when I think of this, is this pilot. This was in New Mexico. I believe he was a private pilot, but connected to the military, and had these three UFOs circling his plane, just sort of these white disks. And he landed and he made a report. He reported this UFO sighting, and it was some days later, these government people came up and asked him about it. They wanted the whole story. They were from some intelligence agency. And he told them exactly what happened, and they gave him a list of questions. And then they asked him, have you had any out-of-body experiences following this sighting? And he was surprised that they asked that, because, yes, he had had a few of them, which he felt was connected. And I do too. I'm not sure what it is. If this, you know, seeing a UFO perhaps wakes you up in some way, or if they're doing this, or what's going on here. But there's a weird connection. I know some people have told me they've, you know, been pulled out of their body and into a UFO, or had an out-of-body experience while they're on board a UFO. I couldn't ignore the paranormal. I just couldn't. I know this is a nuts and bolts phenomena. I mean, people are being scarred, they're being healed, there's landing traces, there's evidence of implants. There's a spiritual aspect to all of this.
I agree with you. In my research, I have found that out-of-body experiences is like when we do remote viewing. Apparently, every human being has the ability to remote view. And I have read reports where the CIA and the FBI has this group of eggheads that have been doing this for years. I'm reading a book about it. And their ability to out-of-body experience, they can go right to an alien group or ship and actually make changes on the ship. So I know there's something there, and I'm starting to see more and more that, you know, our consciousness, or as some people believe, a soul, is able to travel without the body.
Yeah, I totally. I mean, I looked deep into ghosts as well, and near-death experiences and mediumship. And I think, you know, the evidence for you know, channeling, the evidence for life after death, for, you know, having an astral body,
right?
So to speak, is very strong. I mean, there are astral travelers who have been able to appear in front of people as apparitions,
right,
groups of people.
Right.
Robert Monroe did this.
Yes.
And Sylvan Muldoon and others.
Mm-hmm.
So the evidence is outstanding. That, and, I mean, we know this mathematically as well. quantum physics. And
that entanglement, I really believe, means that every single one of us is entangled, including aliens, which allows
yep.
us to be free without our bodies. It's just, I've read that we're close to an awakening, that people on Earth will awaken to this, these things that you're speaking about, you know, being able to leave your body and to express yourself, mediumship, etc. So there are some of us that have been awakened.
I mean, I totally agree. I think religious thought has dominated for centuries, and then we had scientific thought, which really changed the way a lot of people thought and sort of mm-hmm. viewed the world. And now we're kind of swinging back towards sort of a new way of thinking.
New age?
Not my favorite term. But
well, for lack of another one, I mean.
But yeah, you know what I mean. I mean that we're all connected, and that I think this is part of the ET agenda, really, is to wake us up to our own potential, to who we are, that we do have the ability to do telepathy and telekinesis.
Right.
And, you know, for that matter, levitation and all these things, you know, healing. Because when someone's taken on board a craft, the thing that they report most is being physically examined, yes. And, you know, perhaps mm-hmm. Genetic material taken.
Right.
But beyond that, if someone, you know, is given messages of any kind, it's usually, I would say most often, some sort of warning against nuclear proliferation.
Right.
Or pollution, or our warlike ways, or upcoming hurricanes and disasters. They seem to be very concerned about us and our planet. And it goes beyond that. People are, and this is fascinating to me, because this is in the early accounts and still up to modern day. People are taken to the control room or the engine room.
Right, right.
Both. Not uncommon. And there's the ETs. And I think that's what we're dealing with here. I know there are different explanations, like, you know, time travelers or interdimensional beings, or, gosh, some people are sure this is demonic. I don't think so. I've looked into all of this.
Yeah.
But people are taken to the control room and actually, you know, set into the chair and told how to fly this craft, or actually do fly the craft. Or, you know, they're taken to the engine room and shown, oh, this is how it works. You know, we use electromagnetics. Why are you using fossil fuels? You don't need to. There's alternative sources of energy. And here's how we do it. This is definitely a thing. And some people are given very detailed plans. And beyond that, there's a third aspect, you know, the messages type thing. And this is all outlined by Thomas Bullard years ago.
Mm-hmm.
He studied 300-some cases. And this is what he outlined. And it definitely matches up with my research. People are given messages that are in some way spiritual, often involving healing, you know, hands-on healing, Reiki type thing.
Right.
But past lives, out-of-body stuff, channeling.
We're talking with UFO Sasquatch ghost author and researcher Preston Dennett. We're going to ask him about some of those out-of-body experiences coming up on Strange Harbor.
You're listening to Strange Harbor, ghosts, UFOs, alien Sasquatch, all things strange. Online at strangeharbor.net. Strange Harbor. Be strange.
Welcome to Strange Harbor. If you've had an out-of-the-ordinary experience, then come to strangeharbor.net and let us know what it is.
It's Strange Harbor, where we talk about the weird, and we've been talking with researcher and author Preston Dennett. Okay, where did we leave off? We were talking about UFO abductions and out-of-body experiences. Can you explain what you found in your research?
This guy interviewed in upstate New York had a lifetime of experiences, which weren't, you know, particularly fun. It was pretty traumatizing for him. He had a lot of missing time, would wake up with scars and burns and having a lot of trauma from it, had PTSD, and finally had a fully conscious experience, and was just taken on board, and they said, you need to know why we've contacted you. We're not here to harm you, and here's your child. This is a project, and isn't she beautiful?
Mm.
He was pretty upset because, he felt love for what was obviously his child, he felt.
Yeah.
But was half ET, and he felt a little bit repulsed, and just had a lot of sort of conflicting emotions, but came away from his experiences with this really profound ability to give psychic readings. And he would actually hear these voices in his head whenever he'd see a person he was supposed to read. They'd be like, you have a job to do. Go read that person. Well, he's very good at it. In fact, he told this one lady, you have to go home. You have to go home right now and talk to your husband. And usually he never sees these people ever again. You know, it's just sort of a random walk by, and he gives a message that he's supposed to give.
Right.
But it was a couple of years later, he's in the grocery store, and there's this woman. And she changes lines and comes up to him, and he's like, oh, no. She's like, you're that man who gave me that message to go home. And he's like, yeah, I remember. She says, I just want to thank you from the bottom of my heart because I went home and I had the most wonderful evening with my husband. And he died that evening in his sleep.
Oh, my goodness.
So this is the sort of thing he's going through on a daily basis. And I hear that, you know, quite a bit. People become channelers. Or, like one guy, he became a water dowser. I'm like, wow. All right.
You know, I'm looking over your list of books on PrestonDennett.Weebly.com, and I see UFOs over New York, over California, over New Mexico, Nevada, Arizona, Colorado. I see no UFOs over Washington, and we had UFOs here 2 weeks before Roswell. We got to have.
You're on my list.
I'm usually on a different list. It rhymes with hit. But
Washington is a huge state in terms of the number of sightings.
So you have plans for a UFOs over Washington State in the future?
I want to do all 50 states.
Oh, nice.
It'll take me about 50 years. but yeah, I mean, that's definitely one. I want to do Oregon and Washington because, you know, I'm sort of here on the West Coast.
Mm-hmm.
I've been up in all these states. And Washington has got quite a story to tell. It's got a lot of cases, partly I think because that's where New Fork, National UFO Reporting Center, originated or is based.
Right.
So, I don't know. Yeah, Washington's huge. Texas. I'm not sure I even want to touch Texas. Florida. California is the biggest in terms of the number of reports.
Yeah. It's a lot like Sasquatch. People don't realize that there's Sasquatch all over the place, not just the Pacific Northwest. You know, Texas actually has a rather large Sasquatch population, allegedly, you know, from reports, credible reports and stuff. Do you have, like, a favorite UFO area that you like to focus on or hear about or just fascinated with? Or are they all just the same? Is it a planet thing to you?
My research has been kind of very wide-reaching, I would say, but one thing that does fascinate me is the Southern California area off the coast here.
Yeah.
I did this. There was a wave of sightings, 1992 to 1994, over my hometown of Topanga Canyon, and it just blew my mind. There was people calling the police, the newspaper. This wave of sightings happened on June 14th, 1992. And I ended up interviewing many, many people. I found like 30 different groups of witnesses who saw stuff on that one night alone.
Wow. I'm from Huntington Beach, California. I was born and raised there. I've seen my fair share of UFOs out in the sea.
I ended up writing a book called Undersea UFO Base.
Because
I was like, okay, you know, witnesses were telling me they think there's a base in this area. And from the very beginning, I got these reports of USOs, unidentified submersible objects.
Right.
And I started to look into it, and I wrote a chapter for ocean-going UFOs and UFOs over California. And I thought, you know what, let's write an article about this, because I'm getting more reports. And some of the people I was talking to had been taken into an underground base. I'm like, okay. And I had some cases involving hundreds of objects, not just one or two. But, you know, 50 or 100 or 200.
Right.
And they were coming from below. They weren't coming from above.
Exactly.
So I'm like, okay. So I found out that Andruffel had cases in this area.
Uh-huh.
Robert Stanley, Bill Hamilton, Barbara Lamb, Yvonne Smith. You know, all the Southern California researchers knew about this area.
Yeah, I know Barbara Lamb that you're speaking of.
She's a wonderful researcher, one of my favorite.
My dad and I both were in the Navy, and San Diego gets hit a lot with UFOs, USOs. Have you gone to Mexico and been part of that San Diego, Mexico USOs?
I've been down to Mexico a couple of times. I was there actually during the total solar eclipse, and there was a huge wave of sightings over Mexico City, which I missed because I was in La Paz. Yeah, Mexico is amazing because they've had a lot of sightings, and their government has been a little bit more forthcoming in some ways, particularly after that Mexico City sighting, because I think it was more than 20 people videotaped it.
Right.
An object hovering over the city from different locations, so it was undeniable. And they've had some really crazy footage come out that they've released more publicly. Some of these South American countries, Central American, might be the ones who actually sort of push the disclosure movement forward. I know Chile and Brazil have been somewhat more forthcoming than other countries, for sure.
I mean, this is an international thing. It's not just the United States. I mean, Canada and Mexico and Great Britain and...
A UFO in the form of a bright light is seen descending over the Dome of the Rock in Jerusalem.
On a clear night in Manitoba, you may see all sorts of things in the sky, perhaps even a UFO.
There are more and more reports of UFOs being made each year. Some simply can't be easily explained.
No way, it broke a sound barrier.
Kent Graham saw something strange in the sky above Winnipeg. Moves he can't imagine any earthly object duplicating.
Here in Arizona today, marking 21 years since the Phoenix Lights first appeared in the sky.
Is it possible that an alien spacecraft flew above Stephenville, Texas in January of 2008?
On November 14th, 2004, Commander David Fravor and his wingman pilot took off from the USS Nimitz.
I was the commanding officer of Strike Fighter Squadron 401, the Black Aces. The Princeton Control comes up and says, we're going to suspend training. We have real-world tasking.
Then far below in the water, they see what looks like a plane crash or a submerging submarine.
This thing would go instantaneous from one way to another, similar to if you threw a ping pong ball against a wall. It goes from basically just almost a hover into a pretty aggressive climb up to our altitude, so there's a bit of fear because now you're out there dealing with something that you have no idea what it is. It's actually reacting to what we're doing. I'm kind of pulling nose, you know, to where he's going to be, and he's coming up. He just rapidly accelerates beyond anything that I've ever seen. Crosses my nose, and it's gone.
According to Fravor, the Tic Tac accelerated from a standing position and flew approximately 60 miles in under a minute, as fast as 3,700 miles an hour.
I mean, it goes on and on. We don't get much out of China. They don't talk about it. Or have
they don't
you...
talk about anything.
There is a book by Paul Dong and UFOs Over China. I had to get it because the only source that I have of encounters in China.
Huh.
But definitely, it does happen. You know, I wrote a book called Schoolyard UFO Encounters, where these objects hover over schoolyards. And there was cases in China. There was actually cases all over the world, but I didn't get any in Russia. I know they're there. That's another country that's, you know, sometimes hard to get UFO information.
Well, at least they're not like the United States was saying, there's nothing to see here.
Yeah, move along. Move along. You don't see that.
Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
You don't see that UFO in the sky hovering there in front of your face. You don't see it.
No. And the aliens that are waving through the windows, they're not really there.
Yeah, it's infuriating. I mean, you know, going back to the schoolyard cases, I found like 100 cases from all kinds of researchers, like Raymond Fowler, who you may have heard of. He wrote about the Betty Andreessen case. Just a great researcher. And he had this one case which took place in 1966, I believe, over Beverly High School. This is in Massachusetts. And it was an amazing case where it began when a little 12-year-old girl, I think she was in her house next to the school and saw this UFO just floating down the street. she comes, you know, towards the school, and she comes running down the stairs and tells her mom, like, a UFO. And her mom's like, you know, shut up. And she's like, no, for real, for real, for real. Just went down the street towards the school. And so her mom and two friends walk down the street to Beverly High School, and to their shock, hovering over the school are three objects. Huh. And one's fairly close, you know, one's over the school itself, and one's pretty high up there. And one of the ladies, she raises her hand and kind of waves at the closest UFO, and this darn thing drops down over her head about 20 feet.
Oh, wow.
All over three of them. Two of them took off running, and she stayed there, you know, really shook up, paralyzed with fear. And this object gets even lower to, like, you know, 10 or 5 feet over her head, and then takes off. And so they, of course, scream and run home. One of the ladies was so terrified, she actually, you know, loosened her bladder. Very afraid.
Oh, yeah.
So they call the police, and they grab a group of neighbors and everyone in the house, and there's a group of 10 people now, or 12, and they go back to Beverly High School, which is, you know, less than a block away. And sure enough, there's these objects are still there, and one's now about 40 feet over the school. And the police come up, and they're like, all right, who called about the plane? And they look, they pointed to the UFO, and the police are visibly shaken. They jump out of their car. They stare at it. You know, Raymond Fowler interviewed all these people. And eventually, these objects move off. And so Project Blue Book shows up, and, well, they didn't actually show up. I don't think they actually interviewed any of the witnesses, but they did have a conclusion. Their conclusion for what these people saw was Venus.
Yeah. I'm surprised it wasn't swamp gas.
Right.
Oh, right? Lord.
Finding Venus really is going to make someone pee in their pants? Seriously? I mean, it's horrifying to me how badly our government has bungled this. I mean, it's one thing to, you know, say, oh, we can't talk about it. But it's another to just call it Venus when they know full well, and from the very beginning, they've known that this is a real phenomena.
Yeah. I have to start thinking about what you said now. I mean, I see ghosts. I'm not sure how that relates to UFOs for me, but I'm going to have to research that.
Yeah, I think this is part of the awakening. This is kind of how the world is beginning to change. A weird thing I hear from a lot of experiencers is, like, the ETs tell them, and I don't know quite what this means because it's always a little bit different, but the world will be fundamentally different.
Yeah.
We're moving into the fifth dimension. The veil is getting thinner. We're going to raise a vibration. And it's all kind of put in different terms that are not, you know, pleasingly scientific, but are consistent and definitely make me wonder, because this whole paranormal aspect is definitely a part of this.
I know agree that, with you.
There's a lot of researchers who focus on the nuts and bolts aspect.
Right.
And I appreciate that. But if we really want to get to the truth of all this, we're going to, you know, people are beginning to realize how much consciousness is all a part of this.
And dimensions. I really believe that these ghostly figures or the things that I see and interact with are interdimensional. It makes sense to me. Scientifically, it makes sense to me. So,
yeah.
And the higher...
Yeah, I think UFOs are, in effect, interdimensional as well.
Yeah, I think so, too.
I mean, not to say that they're not physical or ships from other planets, which I think that's mostly what we're dealing with here.
Right.
But, you know, there's weird symbolic aspects to some of this. And going on board a UFO is, you know, has a lot of similarities to a near-death experience.
Right,
and
right.
People describe, like, the inside of a UFO is much larger on the inside than it appears on the outside.
And it's really light, very bright light.
Like which made
people,
of light,
mm-hmm.
Which is something you definitely see in near-death experiences and out-of-body experiences. All kinds of just very interesting things, similarities, and make me think, okay, there's definitely, I mean, ETs have an understanding of interdimensional travel. We know
right.
that because their ships turn at right angles and change size.
Yeah.
Like, one guy asked, well, how big was the UFO that you were in? And he's like, I'm not sure you're going to believe me, but this darn thing was changing sizes. And I absolutely did believe him.
Yes.
This is a Navy guy, you know, a real good witness. He was a corpsman and a medic and was taken off a Navy ship and into this giant UFO and saw praying mantis-type ETs. They gave him messages. It's a really crazy case.
Huh.
And yeah, he's like, yeah, the room changed size. I'm like, wow, this is exactly what Bill Foster told me. He's another guy I interviewed who ended up writing a book about his experiences, mm-hmm. the Black Triangle Abduction. And he was having all these encounters with grays and being taken on board, had been his whole life. He finally woke up to it and would basically converse with these guys because, you know, it was happening enough where he was getting over his fear. And usually they didn't answer his questions. They're like, just don't worry, we'll be out done soon. But he's like, you're always taking me to this one room. How big is this darn craft? Because it appeared to be as big as a city block. And he had to ask it like two or three times. And finally this gray turns to him and actually kind of laughs or smiles. He says it's the only time he's ever seen this guy smile in any way. And he smiled at him and said, it's as big as we want it to be. They have the ability to change the size of their UFO as suits their needs.
So here's the question. Here's the big question. What do you want to tell our listeners?
After, you know, studying hundreds of encounters and reading every book I can get my hands on, I've come to look at extraterrestrials as, you know, for sure real, but very much like people. Their behavior falls under the same umbrella as human behavior. They're not all, you know, puppies and rainbows by any means. there are, I think one of the ET agendas is absolutely healing humanity. I've got some 300 documented cases, which I put together in a book, of people who've been healed. This is definitely a thing. And ultimately, you know, because of what people are told and what happens to them when they're taken on board a UFO, I'm very hopeful about how all this rolls out. My one main complaint is the sort of kidnapping aspect of all of this, which there's no excuse for. You can't rationalize it. And some people are definitely having negative encounters. There's no way to avoid that truth. But overall, I'm not afraid of UFOs. I think this is a very good thing for humanity. They seem to be very concerned in the most, you know, as Bud Hopkins said, the lovely aspects of being human. They're very interested in our emotions. They're very interested in, you know, our planet, protecting it and waking us up. So I think what we're going to be seeing as disclosure rolls out and the cat's out of the bag, you know, everyone knows our government has UFO information that they are not telling us about. More people believe this than don't, according to Gallup polls. And our Pentagon has recently said, you know, we have, quote, material from otherworldly vehicles. That's huge. That should be front page news.
I know. I agree. I mean, the media is so owned by people that don't want this information out.
Six corporations control 90% of the media. In 1983, 90% of American media was owned by 50 companies. In 2011, we've dropped that ownership of 90% of the media down to only six companies. Those six companies are GE, News Corporation, Disney, Viacom, Time Warner, and CBS. So if we look at how many news executives those companies have and how many people are being reached, 232 news executives at these six corporations control the information diets of 277 million Americans. That means that one news executive at one of these companies controls 850,000 people's television programming.
It's embarrassing.
But it's getting out now, so we're definitely seeing, I think we're going to see disclosure, and as that rolls forward, at some point we're going to have, you know, open official contact with the public at large. We're going to have another Phoenix Lights. We're going to have another, you know, Belgian Wave or Mexico City or Hudson Valley or Gulf Breeze or Stevensville or, you know, more, you know, the O'Hara Airport incident. They're going to come down over New York City. They're going to come down over some small town in Kansas. They're going to do something because this has been very consistent. Every 5 or 10 years, there's an enormous wave.
Right, right.
So we're a little overdue.
Well,
and they're just going to come down and they're going to show themselves. I mean, all we need is a million people to see this. You know, Phoenix Lights was 1994, just before the cell phone craze kind of really took off.
Right.
If that happened now,
oh, yeah,
all bets are off. We're done.
Yeah.
You know, you cannot walk back something like that. Everyone's got pictures of it, and there's 100,000 people who saw it.
I think that's what woke me up is those Phoenix Lights. I mean, I knew that there were UFOs. I just didn't know that they were that in our face. I mean, that was just amazing. Yeah, yeah.
Someone's seeing a UFO right now, this very second. Because if you look at MUFON, Mutual UFO Network, and NUFORC, National UFO Reporting Center, they get some dozen reports daily.
Oh, yeah.
And as a researcher, I'm sure you realize this. Most people don't report their sightings. They don't. They don't call the police. They don't call MUFON.
They're ashamed or they're afraid or they don't believe what they saw. And
right. So if there's 20 reports, and that's a low ball, coming in daily, and we times that by 10, which is a very conservative estimate, that's 200 reports daily. Basically, at any given second, someone's probably being taken on board. Someone's seeing a UFO. There's a landing. Face-to-face contact. This is an ongoing phenomenon.
Preston, promise me that you'll come back. I mean, your stories, your books, all your books can be at Amazon, right?
That's right. Yep. I have a website. It's got a new YouTube channel. And
what's your website?
My website is PrestonDennett.Weebly.com. If you just Google my name, it should take you there. But you can definitely contact me through my website. And, always working on new stuff. My latest book is UFOs at the Drive-In, which we didn't get into. But, oh, man, they are hovering over drive-in theaters.
Didn't we close those up?
No, not completely, and they're coming back.
Oh, no. Yeah, I bet they would. Everybody gets in their car and doesn't have to breathe the same air as the person next to him. Preston, I can't tell you how much I appreciate you coming on the radio program. I mean, I've been looking forward to this for days, and I know that you have this strong connection with MUFON, as I do, as a certified field investigator. I can't wait to have you back.
Awesome. Hey, I had so much fun. Yeah, anytime.
Well, that'll do it for this episode of Strange Harbor. If you want to know more about Preston, if you want to see some of the latest UFO sightings, Sasquatch reports, or if you want to contact us and yell at us for being tinfoil hat-wearing whack jobs, just log on to strangeharbor.net.
You're listening to Strange Harbor. Ghosts, UFOs, aliens, Sasquatch, all things strange. Online at strangeharbor.net. Strange Harbor. Be strange.